Hello everyone, I'm Keith Powell and welcome to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Our main story today concerns Radio Australia. On Tuesday, this past week, the ABC announced that it would be halting all shortwave transmissions beginning in January from Radio Australia. They will end on January 31st. But they will continue to broadcast through the internet, satellite, and FM to their target audience, which is the Pacific region. Now, the ABC and Radio Australia is one of those international broadcasters that's actually heard widely around the world. Listeners in North America may know the frequency of 9580, where you can hear Radio Australia clear as a bell through the morning hours, and of course during certain other parts of the day, when they change frequencies on, of course, different frequencies. A decision to halt the shortwave broadcast early next year has been criticized by the former manager of Radio Australia. The transmissions to Asia and the Pacific will cease, and alternatives will be more prevalent. The former head of Radio Australia and subsequently a consultant on international broadcasting in the Pacific, Jean-Gabriel Manguet, told Bruce Hill the decision is short-sighted.
Shortwave, as we know, has been certainly Radio Australia's, the ABC's, historic way to reach audiences far away, and in particular in the Asia-Pacific region. For a number of years, it has been discussed and suggested that that was on its way out. When I was at Radio Australia in the late 90s, we were faced with the reality of the cessation of shortwave broadcasting to Asia. However, it was maintained to the Pacific. And the argument there was that to maintain it, it was essential to reach people in remote areas and in countries which are developing countries and who don't necessarily have already access to new modes of transmission. Now, at Radio Australia, I know I was part of a team who put in place a whole network of rebroadcasts of FM transmitters in Asia and the Pacific, because we knew that in some places shortwave wasn't effective anymore. The point here is that you cannot do one without the other. I know the ABC is making the point that we want to make our content available on a range of platforms. Yes, let's do it, but let's not do it at the cost of particular platforms which are still very effective in certain regions. And I would argue that in the Pacific, shortwave is still a very relevant delivery platform.
Why is it still relevant in the Pacific? Because everywhere else in the world, everything's online, it's on the internet, it's on FM, it can get it anywhere. Why is shortwave still necessary in the Pacific, do you think?
Because most of the people in the Pacific live in rural areas, and most of them still do not have access to the internet, still do not have access to FM broadcasts, still do not have access to mobile telephony. It's very nice to say that people will listen to FM radio on their telephone. Well, no, they won't, because certainly telephony has made a big progress in the Pacific. But people, battery time on your mobile phone is something that's not affordable for everybody in the region. People are really cautious at the way they use their telephones, and as I said, FM isn't always available. So it may be true for urban centres, but certainly not in rural areas, and therefore for most of the people.
And what about in emergency situations such as cyclones, when, say, FM transmitters are often the first to blow over?
Well, that's right, yes. I mean, and that's why there is still a case for that that kind of service. Now, I can see the attraction for an ABC management which is strapped for funds, which is squeezed by very hostile conservative governments, to look around and look for money, and hey, here is another little pot of money that we hadn't touched so far to use that. But listen, I think it's basically another knife in the in the back of Radio Australia, the much maligned Radio Australia.
Could there be any positives to this? Is moving to other platforms challenging the ABC and Radio Australia to do more for overseas people in different ways using different platforms?
Well, I think the onus is on the ABC and on ABC managers in charge of international to develop those other platforms sufficiently and to such a stage that then you can consider stopping shortwave broadcasting. But listen, so far, it is not my experience going into the Pacific that the FM relays that have been put in place have been maintained adequately. It is not my experience that ABC programs are being rebroadcast on local stations, which is a key delivery platform to reach audiences there, much more than our own FM services. Until they have developed those platforms sufficiently, they shouldn't be considering stopping shortwave broadcasting.
How do you think this will be received in the Pacific?
Well, I don't know, Bruce, because I think the ABC has lost a lot of listeners. With due respect to your excellent work and of your few colleagues who are left, I don't know that people will even realise that's going on. And that's the other issue. People in Australia, the Australian public, do not realise what has been the damage that has been caused to the ABC's international operation through neglect on one hand and very poor management on the other.
That was the former head of Radio Australia and a consultant on international broadcasting in the Pacific, Jean-Gabriel Monguet, speaking with Bruce Hill. Now, Radio Australia is one of those stations that was, well, just as popular as stations, for example, like Radio Netherlands, which had a very large audience, and others as well. And from their site in Shepparton, they were able to reach listeners all around the world in areas that they were not even targeting. The programs, of course, were meant for the Pacific and Asia. The Asia, of course, service was cut not too long ago. But through their relays to the Pacific via Shepparton, they can also reach a far wider audience, going all the way to the North Pole, Canada, the United States, all across Europe, and of course even here in Asia. Here in Taiwan, I was able to pick up Radio Australia on the three frequencies that they were using for the Pacific with great ease. Now, Shepparton is a site that was built back in the 1930s. Nigel Holmes was the former frequency manager for Radio Australia until he retired a few years ago.
The Shepparton site's a couple of hundred kilometres inland. It's not subject to salt spray or cyclonic winds. The towers were painted with a lead-based paints. Now, we haven't replaced those lead-based paints, but a few years ago we tested the metallurgy of the towers and it was found to exceed the original design parameters. So they were well installed, they've been well looked after. I think it's just a matter of care and maintenance, and a lot of this plant can last a surprisingly long time. That RCA 50 kilowatt transmitter that I was talking about was in service as late as 1996. So what's that, that's 52 years.
Wow.
Not a bad innings for a transmitter. Uh-huh. It used 880 triodes in the output stage, water-cooled triodes. A lot of the components were mechanical components when they were no longer available from RCA. We were able to make them in Shepparton. It's a substantial town and has a lot of engineering capacity and expertise available locally. So even now with the Harris transmitters, the SW100As, with the aerial switch, the antenna matrix switch on the site, it's no longer supported by its manufacturer, even though it was only installed in the mid-1990s. But we can find enough engineering talent in the town of Shepparton to build any of the components that we need to maintain it. So it's still an economic proposition to maintain. The SW100 transmitters, I think they only contain one type of integrated circuit, which was used in a servo amplifier. The rest of the components are relatively discrete. The big tubes are still manufactured and they can be rebuilt. So these devices can be maintained without too much effort if you put your mind to it to train staff. In fact, we're finding that the provision of trained staff with experience and an understanding of high-power HF transmitters That's probably the factor that gives us the most concern about the longevity of a station such as Shepparton.
How does it make you personally feel when you look at the history of Radio Australia, when you look at the reach that it has, the being able to maintain these antennas, which some stations probably would have torn down 20 years ago, how does it make you feel?
As with any industrial process, you've got to look at it in a closed circle from beginning to end. Not only do you have a plant that was well designed, well engineered, well installed, and has been well maintained by enthusiastic and capable individuals, you've got to look at the response from the audiences. I've got letters here on file. I've got some letters from a family, husband, wife, two children. They were sailing in the South Pacific. Their yacht broke up in a storm. They landed literally on a deserted Pacific island, and for several months they were listening to Radio Australia with their battery-powered receiver until rescue came along and they were retrieved from the island. And they've written letters, they've enclosed photographs that they took of their time on the island. You put all these pieces of a mosaic together and it paints a powerfully moving picture of where broadcasting stands in the scheme of things. And as I say, it's a big package deal. I don't want to single out any particular component of it. You've got dedicated program makers on the one side in the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, and then you've got those far-sighted individuals in government who argued for the provision of funding to establish what is a fairly capital-intensive endeavour. As I said, Shepparton today, it's operating with 7 100 kilowatt transmitters. We have, I think, 17 antennas on the site. Building infrastructure is superb. To re-establish a site like that from scratch would be an outlay, and I'm only I'm broadly guessing here, something in the order of probably $100 to $120 million Australian, about the same in US dollars. I don't think too many governments, or certainly the Australian government today, wouldn't put up that kind of funding to establish a site like this from the ground up. But it's there, it's in place, and with a little bit of maintenance, which is a few percent of that figure that I just mentioned, it operates reliably around the clock, and it's providing a service into an area where there's often no alternative, or else the alternative is modified by prevailing regimes locally. It's quite a good feeling to think that you've made a difference to someone's life by giving them access to news and information and educational material and the things that you and I might take for granted. Although actually, Keith, you and I have been to these remote places and we've seen how the provision of simple radio program services makes such a difference.
Nigel Holmes, the former frequency manager of Radio Australia, talking about the Shepparton site.
Everyone, you're listening to Radio Australia, the overseas service of the Australian Broadcasting Commission, calling from Melbourne in Victoria.
Since it was announced that Radio Australia would be leaving shortwave. Now, I want to make a correction here because some people thought that Radio Australia was vanishing completely. No, it isn't. Radio Australia will continue and will continue to produce the twice daily current affairs program Pacific Beat, hosted by Bruce Hill and Richard Erwart, along with carrying program from ABC Radio National. But they are leaving shortwave to the Western and Eastern Pacific. Now, the reasons, of course, are rather clear. Over the last number of years, Radio Australia has been setting up FM transmitters in places like Port Moresby, Papua New Guinea, and in Fiji, and they want to expand that network. Now, shortwave listening in the Pacific is very different now from what it was 20 years ago. And it's the same thing that you're seeing even in parts of Southeast Asia. I remember the first time I went to Burma, otherwise known as Myanmar, the internet was absolutely appalling and was very expensive. When I was there this past year, it is now one of the most modern in the world and is super fast. So the technology has been changing dramatically. Now, when international broadcasters started to make massive cuts, one of the first, actually, to drop a whole region was the BBC World Service. And that was a number of years ago. Not too long after, Radio Nederland also dropped North America. And since that time, we have seen stations either cutting back or going off air completely. For example, Voice of Russia is now gone. Stations like Radio Sweden are still around, but now Radio Sweden broadcasts domestically on FM, and it would be the same with a number of other international broadcasters as well. Now, the big international broadcasters like the BBC World Service, Radio France International, and Deutsche Welle do have programs that are targeted to specific regions where shortwave is still somewhat maybe smaller than it once was, but is still somewhat important. But this is also changing really fast. Now, Radio Australia has wanted to expand in the region using FM for quite some time. And of course, they are trying to reach new listeners. Now, a few months ago, it was on all the shortwave blogs that Radio Australia vanished from the shortwave dial. And then, of course, it reappeared. Now, I suspected at the time it was pretty much almost like what Radio Nederland did just before they dropped shortwave to North America. Now, just before Radio Nederland dropped shortwave to North America, they had a special message that was only in the programs to North America that basically said, if you enjoy this program and want it to continue, let us know. Well, this ran for about 6 months, and Radio Nederland received, that is, fewer than 300 letters and emails. So if you want to test who's listening on shortwave, the best thing to do is turn it off and see what the response is. Now, when that happened with Radio Australia, the loudest group ever were DXers. And of course, you've heard me mention this before because I'm on record at saying it. They were the most vocal group, and they don't really seem to be living in the real world. Now, let's get to what happened since then. We're now joined by Paul Walker, a broadcaster himself, who also produced a program that aired on shortwave. Hello, Paul.
Hey, Keith. Nice to join you again.
That's nice to have you back. You know, it's really interesting here because when the announcement was made, I posted on my wall, and you posted on your wall, on our Facebook walls, respectively, and all of a sudden, it appeared in many other places, many other shortwave blogs and DX listening digests. And I found the response rather interesting. Now, there were many people who were saying, well, this was not expected, technology is changing, but there's a certain group, a certain hardcore group of DXers who just, in my view, just don't seem to get it.
No, they don't, and I have a few younger DXers who are friends, and while they're sad to see it go, they get why. I had one friend say pretty much just that to me last night, but reading through the Facebook posts on some, I think there might have been a few posts on an ABC page and your page, the people who say bad choice, bad move, are generally DXers who are 50-plus years old.
And, you know, the interesting thing, Paul, if we talked about this actually before recording, you know, in the last 100 years, So many other mediums to receive content have changed. For example, the way music was recorded to the way music was played to today is completely different from 100 years ago. Television, which started in the late 1920s, which was mechanical, now we have LED, you know, high-definition televisions. Cinemas stopped using film. They're shooting now in 4K. There have been so many technological advances, but it just seems that with shortwave, and it's just almost like it stayed the same. It never really progressed.
Correct. And two of the things that an older DXer brought up to me last night on a public email list exchange was that Pacific stations get their news off of shortwave for rebroadcast. I said, no, not true anymore. A lot of them have enough internet bandwidth these days. They get it off the internet. And he used another example. When Fiji had a military coup a couple years ago, apparently, local rebroadcasts were shut down. These people, the older DXers, are looking at it's great to have to serve the few hundred, maybe the couple thousand people that will use it. They're not looking at the budget and the money side of things.
Now, this is something I should mention because, I mean, you're rather young. You've been in radio not as long as I have or others. And what I find amazing is that you probably know more about radio than many of these DXers who've been DXing for 50 and 60 years.
Generally, I would say you're right. I should state that I'm 33 years old. I've been in radio for 13 years. And I think one of the things that I have going for me is I was actually a DXer long before I was a broadcaster. But having been a broadcaster, I can see both sides of the coin. And I said to someone last night, they could take that $2 million a year they're going to save on shortwave transmissions and buy anyone in Australia who wanted it a free-to-air satellite dish and receiver and have money left over. That free-to-air satellite receiver would provide 24/7 crystal-clear quality. And are there going to be Australians who say, I'm sad to see shortwave go? That's how I listen. Yes, there are going to be some.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a couple dozen, maybe a couple hundred, but it doesn't warrant the money spent. And, you know, give out free-to-air satellite receivers. Build the FM transmission network. What would you rather have? An FM transmission network that covers little pockets but has crystal clear 24/7 stereo quality or an inferior, quote-unquote, AM signal? You know, being shortwave.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I find rather extraordinary in this is that since it was announced that Radio Australia is leaving shortwave, there are a number of DXers who are posting things like, well, you know, if they leave shortwave, I'm never going to listen again because I'm not going to go to my computer and listen online. And it makes me wonder, were they really interested in the content or not, or were they just listening because it was on shortwave?
I would have to say both are possible because there are DXers, and I can't cite names, but there are DXers who listen who like the content. I get that, you know. But some DXers would listen just because it is shortwave and just because, oh, it's coming from 15,000 miles away. It's not a perfect signal. I have to work at it to listen. I get it, but a lot of these DXers are stuck in the 60s and the 70s, and they can't remove their personal tastes, their personal beliefs from the reality of the situation. And that's something I can do. I hate, as a DXer and a broadcaster, I hate when stations go dark or reduce services, but I get why.
Paul, thank you very much for joining us again on the program today. I'm afraid, actually, we've run out of time. We could have actually continued talking about this. So thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio,
scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Category 105, it is PDF-22 journal.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
And finally on the program, propagation, here's Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through December 10th. Fair at low and middle latitudes, fair to poor at high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through December 10th, magnetic conditions active to unsettled, shortwave fade-outs unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK, G1 or G2 geomagnetic storm intervals are likely on December 9th. From Peter Coleman in Prague, the geomagnetic field will be quiet to active on December 10th and 20th. Quiet to unsettled December 11th, 18th, 19th, 23rd to 25th. Mostly quiet on December 12th, 17th, and 26th. Quiet on December 13th to 16th, 27th to 28th. Active to disturb December 21st and 22nd. From SWPC in Boulder, unsettled to active geomagnetic field levels on December 9th to 11th and 19th to 25th. With G1 minor storm levels likely, ANK indices peaking at 20 and 5 on December 9th, 30 and 5 on December 20th. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 on December 12th to 17th and 26th to 31st. Solar flux rising from 72 December 12th to a peak of 86 on December 21st to 27th. The Geminid meteor shower peaks the morning of December 14th. Visual observers lament the full moon, but radio observers have no problem with that. Listen for quick meteor scatter bursts on open FM frequencies. If you're very lucky, you may get an ID, especially with the help of RDS displays. Be on the lookout for winter sporadic openings on VHF in the northern hemisphere and major summer openings in the southern. Also, trans-equatorial FM propagation has been reported from Barbados to southern Brazil. William Hepburn's VHF UHF DX maps show extreme tropospheric ducting off the west coast of Mexico, December 12th and 13th, around Cabo Verde off the west coast of Africa from December 6th to 12th, off the coast of Namibia, December 9th to 11th, between Mozambique and Madagascar, December 11th to 13th, and off the west coast of Australia, December 9th and 10th.
Thanks, Glenn. And Glenn Hauser will be returning with the propagation forecast on January the 7th. The programs over the next few weeks are going to be two specials that we have coming up, and then our annual blooper program, which will be for December 31st. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you all 73 and 88 to the ladies.